Welcome to Building My Legacy Podcast. This podcast is designed for leaders and entrepreneurs who want to leave a legacy and will provide strategies that focus upon key elements for legacy creation, determining your desired impact and its benefit, increasing your legacy's reach by engaging key stakeholders, planning, prioritizing, and executing. Here's your host, Dr. Lois Sonstegard.
Welcome, everybody, to today's Building My Legacy podcast. I have with us today Mark Oristano. He is fascinating in that he has led the life of sports fans that we would dream about, right? Because we wonder, what is it that goes on behind those scenes, behind the doors, behind all of the hoopla that we see and hear about when we think about sports? So he has spent 30 years or more in NFL broadcasting games for the Dallas Cowboys and Houston Oilers. He has worked in the front end in terms of looking at how do you manage all of this. He's worked with the legendary Cowboy president and general manager, Tex Schramm. And so he is going to share with us some of the wisdom that he's gleaned from that experience. By the way, he has a course, an online course, in which he teaches some of this as well. He has a company called Lead with Principle. So with that, Mark, I will let you just get started.
Oh, I'm just taking it on my own, huh? Okay, I got to go solo. That's fine.
You can go solo, or you can tell me, how did you get into broadcasting? How did you get into this whole sports world? Were you a football player yourself, or how did this come about?
No, it actually started for me when I was 14 years old. I was growing up in a suburb of New York City, and I was a confirmed baseball guy. I didn't care about football at all. But one Sunday, there were no baseball games on TV, so I tuned in and watched this game between the New York Giants, who I knew about by reading the newspapers, and a team from Dallas called the Cowboys, who I'd never seen before. And there was one play where the quarterback for the Cowboys hit a receiver about 10 yards downfield, and the guy ran step for step with a defender chasing him 65 yards till he crossed the goal line. It was the most exciting play I'd ever seen in any sport. I became a mammoth Dallas Cowboy fan at the age of 14. Their space-age-looking uniforms, and they're cool and everything. I wrote to the team. I got a press guide. I memorized all the heights and weights and colleges and everything. And in 1970, when it was time to go off to college, I was so fascinated by Texas that I went southwest to Fort Worth and Texas Christian University. I majored in communications. And the summer after my junior year, I was chosen to be an intern at WFAA-TV, which is the ABC affiliate in Dallas. And I worked for a guy named Vern Lundquist, who is one of the most famous and greatest sportscasters of all time. Now, back then, he was the voice of the Cowboys on radio, and he was the sports director at Channel 8. He was my mentor. He taught me most of what I still believe about sports. And I worked my way into first just covering the Cowboys as a reporter and then getting to know people in the front office. And I wound up being hired as not a full-time employee, but a contract employee in a lot of different areas. I wrote for the Cowboy team newspaper. I was a PR assistant on game days. I helped develop the first computer program to keep stats in the NFL, things like that. So I got to work in a lot of different areas at a real kind of golden age time in pro football, the 70s and 80s. And I stood in the locker room after Super Bowl. My goal as a 14-year-old was to be in the locker room with the Cowboys when they won a Super Bowl. And I did it when I was 24.
Oh,
and I stood in the locker room and I held the trophy up over my head, and it felt very, very cool. I lived my dream.
You lived your dream. Okay, so let's talk about Tex Schramm. What did you learn from him? What was it that he uniquely did that made him successful?
Tex Schramm was one of the great sports innovators of the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s. He was, among other things, whether you love it or hate it, I mean, he created what became known as America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. He didn't come up with that term, but he loved it because he thought it really encapsulated what he wanted the team to be. He was the one responsible for instant replay that you see on football. All sports events now have instant replay. That was Tex's idea. He also was the first to put cheerleaders on the sidelines and do dancing and things. So he did a lot of innovative things. But the most innovative thing that he did, as far as I'm concerned, he had a brilliant management style. He kept people engaged. He had an atmosphere from 1960 when the Cowboys were formed to 1989 when the team was sold and he left. that kept people, many, many people stayed that entire 29 years. People were eager to come to work each day to work for the Cowboys because it was an exciting place to be. And I asked him about it one day. We were having a conversation, and this is a mark of this man. I was just a part-time worker, 26, 27 years old, wet behind the ears. He was the second most powerful man in the National Football League, and he treated me like an equal because he treated everybody that way. But I asked him, why is this place, why do people love to come to work here so much? And he said, it's my philosophy. And I said, what is it? And he said, nobody does their best work in a climate of fear.
Oh, interesting.
And that's still the most brilliant management advice I've ever heard from anybody in my entire life. So that's the attitude that pervaded the original Dallas Cowboys. Nobody ever had to come in each day fearing they might lose their job if they screwed up.
So that's fascinating. Okay. So did people make mistakes?
Of course. What happened was it goes back to Texas rules of staffing, which we'll get to in a moment. But another one of his mantra was, if I ask you something and you don't know the answer, tell me you don't know, but you'll have the answer on my desk in 30 minutes. Giving you a chance to go. Now, this is before Google and all that stuff, when you could do it like that, right? So you had to go and get books and the World Almanac and stuff and encyclopedias and read stuff. But it gave you a chance to say, yeah, I don't know. And that's one of the most important things you have to be able to say in any situation, to admit that you don't know. And so, for instance, one time Tex asked me to find out how many times we had lost the coin toss on the road that year before the game. I said, well, I don't know, but I'll have it on your desk in 30 minutes. And I had it on his desk in 10 minutes because I had all the sheets there. But he encouraged people to admit that when they didn't know something, he encouraged people to ask for help if they needed it. But what it boils down to is Tex had three rules for staffing a company, and they're very simple. And I know as I sit here and talk to you about this, people are going to listen and say, well, this is so elementary, but they're not doing it. Because it's so simple, it doesn't sound like it's going to work. Texas three rules for staffing. Number one, hire the best people you can find. Duh, right? Hire the best people you can find. Going to cut down on turnover. They're going to be smarter. They're going to stay late. They're going to work harder. They're going to do more to, please you and whatever. That's number one. Number two is train them your way. Once you've brought them in and you know they're the best, teach them how you do things. If you bring a new quarterback into your team, you're the Dallas Cowboys, you're not going to give him the New York Giants playbook. You're going to give him your playbook and teach him how you do things. And the third is get out of their way and let them do the job you hired them to do. Don't micromanage. Don't stand over their shoulder like your mommy or daddy checking their homework. And within those three rules, there was the feeling that if you made a mistake once, you were gently corrected and said, no, look, this is how we do this. You made a mistake twice, you got corrected a little more firmly. If you made a mistake the third time, maybe it's time to go back and revisit rule number one. Did you hire the best person you could find? So with those three rules, as I said before, he cut down turnover within the organization. I mean, there were literally secretaries who stayed there for 30 years working for Tex or for Tom Landry or for other people in the organization. The ticket manager, Kay Lang, stayed there for 30 years. And they just loved being there. They didn't care about advancing, didn't make any difference. They were part of a team. And being part of a team is one of the most enjoyable experiences you can have. Being part of a group of people with a common goal, whether it's on the field to win the Super Bowl or off the field to help the team prepare to win the Super Bowl. So Texas' three rules basically are the pyramid that you build on.
So what's interesting is, look at what's happening in our organizations right now. We have employees who say, you know what, they silently are quitting. I'll do what I need to do, but I'm just putting in my time and picking up a paycheck. You have employers who are saying, you know what, we got to cut numbers. We're going to just be drastic about it because the economy isn't good. We're not getting the results we want. We're going to just cut, 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 cut. So loyalty on both sides, we're losing, right? If you don't have loyalty, it's very difficult to build passion.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? So that was one of the things that Tex Schramm did, was he built an incredible, loyal following.
And it was not an easy beginning, because when the team started in 1960 as an expansion franchise, they did not win. Their first season, they didn't win a game. Their second season, they only won a couple. And it took a while. And then the city of Dallas went through the trauma in 1963 of the Kennedy assassination. So it was a very tough place to build a successful franchise, but he did it through keeping turnover at bay, keeping the best people in their jobs as long as he could, and gaining that respect that you talked about. Yes, you have to have respect. Has to be a two-way street. And I will say right up front, after 30 years in broadcasting, I began to consider broadcasting the only business that eats its young, because there are a lot of people in broadcasting who are you know, vicious and want to climb to the top and want to step on you. And I had a lot of bosses that I did not get along with because they treated me like dirt. And there was no risk. I was to respect them and be grateful every time they gave me the paycheck, but I didn't get anything in reverse. And yes, you're right. It's a terrible, terrible feeling to walk into work each day dreading the fact that you might see your boss.
Okay. So you've experienced this incredible environment. You've also experienced this other environment. Speak a little bit to what we do. How do we come? How do we begin to address some of this so we can have workplaces that people actually want to be in again?
Very good question. I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and I said, you know, I have never met the CEO of a pizza company, the guys who go out front in their TV commercials, and you see them on football games all the time talking about, you know, the best pizza and stuffed crust and pizza this high and you can't even finish a bite. But I've met hundreds probably of pizza delivery guys who bring the pizza to my house. They're a lot more important to me than the CEO is. I don't care about the CEO. I care about the guy that shows up at the door with the product. And if the company doesn't value that guy, they're going to have what you've been talking about. They're going to have turnover, going to have unhappy people who don't want to be there, who are just there to collect a paycheck. And that's the worst feeling in the world. Part of the responsibility of fixing that, I think, falls on employees to stand up and say, you can't treat me like this. It's hard to do. It's hard to realize that you may say something that will get you fired if you stand up for yourself. But you have to be willing to take that chance. And I took that chance a couple of times and I got fired and I had to find new work. But that's, you know, if you want to climb the ladder, you got to climb the ladder.
Tell me, what was it that changed in broadcasting that it went from mentoring, nurturing, that's what they did for you initially, to eating their young? A shift happened mentally, psychologically, in the business. What happened? What shifted?
Well, for me, I had a series of bosses who were dictatorial or who were maybe the bullies in plain language, who, even though they couldn't really do my job and probably couldn't go on camera and do what I did, lorded over me the fact that they were the boss and they were in charge and I did what they told me to do. And there's not a feeling of, as I mentioned before, hire somebody and then get out of their way and let them do their job. When that doesn't exist, when that feeling isn't there, you just feel like a cog in a machine. I'll give you one brief example. In 1975, I was the weekend sportscaster at the CBS TV station in Dallas. I've been there 6 weeks and I had yet to meet the general manager, my boss. Excuse me. Got on the elevator one day to go from the lobby down to the newsroom, and the general manager was on the elevator when the door opened. I said, "Good morning, Mr. Smith." My chance to introduce myself. He looked over the top of his newspaper at me, snapped the newspaper back and kept on reading. Never said a word. I didn't last there very long. Jump ahead a year to September 26, 1976. I actually remember the date, and there's a reason why. I was a Cowboy game day PR assistant. I was in charge of the radio, TV, press box, getting everything ready, getting people information they needed, et cetera. And usually, I would show up 3 hours before kickoff to get everything ready. September 26, 1976, I showed up midway through the second quarter. Everybody knew I was going to be late because I was at the hospital because my first child, my son Kelly, was born that day. So they all knew I was going to be late. It was no problem. The following Tuesday, after every game, we would have what we called the Landry Luncheon, where head coach Tom Landry would meet the media, talk about the last game and the next game. And the PR staff each week would put together a handout for the media which at the bottom had a list of big plays of the last game, big play on offense, big play on defense. Now, totally unknown to me, at the bottom of the list, the Tuesday after my son was born, they put biggest play of the game, Kelly Robert Oristano, who checked in at Presbyterian Hospital weighing 7 pounds, 11 ounces and kept his father, Mark, away from the game until midway in the second quarter. After that was passed around, everybody in the room, including Tex and Coach Landry, came over to congratulate me. Now, which company would you rather work for, the TV station or the Cowboys? No comparisons.
So tell me something else. Here's one of the dilemmas you have in a company, and you had it with it. You had to have had it with the Cowboys. And that is, you have a group of people that are staying. They're loyal. They're passionate. You love them because you've learned to rely on them. Part of the reason why people leave and go to a new organization opportunity, but part of it's also pay adjustment. They want to move up in terms of pay. How did you balance that so that you didn't have brain drain over salary issues, or did you?
I never really, it's funny, almost every time in my career when I was seeking a job and they mentioned money, I just said, okay, fine. I never even negotiated because I thought, well, they're going to pay me to go to football games. How bad can life be? They're going to pay me to go to the Super Bowl. They paid very well. The Cowboys paid very well for what I did. And I'm sure they paid their full-time people commensurately well for what they did. So I never really had an issue in terms of money. I mean, I was working for one of the most glamorous organizations in the country, getting to do exactly what I wanted to do and being nicely paid for it. As I said, I was a contract employee, not a full-time employee, but I never even considered the money. Was just like an extra. It was like, oh, you're going to pay me to do this? How cool. I can deal with this. Yeah, sure. I'll take a little money for going to the game. So it was just, I mean, it was, it's really, I know it's kind of hard to explain to people who've never experienced the great team feeling that exists. Yes, we had a great team on the field. We won Super Bowls. We had an equally great team in the front office that got along, that did, that just did the job they were expected to do without question and with great leadership from Tex and others.
So what's interesting in your description is I was reflecting on my experience in leading and managing organizations, and kind of my barometer for looking at pay was, number one, generally that people wanted in work was, do you treat me with respect? Do you value my opinion, my contribution, right? Number two was communication. Do you communicate to me with clearly so I can actually do a great job, and clearly when I'm not doing a good job so I can correct? That was number two. Number three was payment. But it was third. It came after one and two. If one and two were being met, three generally wasn't an issue. But if one and two were not being met, without a doubt, three emerged as number one.
You have to pay me to be unhappy, I guess.
You have to pay me to put up with this, was sort of the feeling, right?
It's a terrible feeling. We have to be paid to work. I mean, that's part of the deal. But when you get to do the rewarding, exciting, new, developing new ideas kind of work, it takes the place of money. It doesn't matter. And actually, the three steps that you just outlined almost perfectly reflect Texas three steps of staffing.
In a way, it does, doesn't it?
Hire the best people, train them your way, and get out of their way. As you get out of their way, also slip them a paycheck every week. But it's the feeling of being part of a team. You know, this is interesting. You can pick another company, pick Amazon. You can be called part of the Amazon team. And I've said for years, Jeff Bezos didn't make $150 billion. A bunch of delivery guys and people who wrap packages made $150 billion. But that's just part of it. That's part of a not make believe team, but a kind of what's the word I'm looking for? A made up team, kind of. I was literally part of a team that had a team. I mean, this football is a team sport, and the whole point is getting a team ready to do things. So it was a little more glamorous, a little different in football. Can you recreate that same atmosphere at a company like Amazon? I don't know. I've never run a company like Amazon, but you got to make people feel like they're contributing to something bigger than themselves.
You know, Isn't that what we all want? We want to be more than who we are, right? Better than who we are.
Yep.
And who we hang out with makes a huge difference relative to that. For you, if you are working with somebody who is moving, let's say, into the C-suite, let's say a brand new CEO of a big company, number one advice that you would give?
Number one advice would be, as I said before, that which is harmful to you, do not do to another. Granted, as a CEO or as a manager at any level, you're going to have to sometimes let people go. And guess what? It should hurt you to do that. It should not be something that you relish. You need to just understand that you're dealing with other people, and those other people, that the guy you just hired for minimum wage on the shop floor may have the best idea the company's ever had. So one of my criteria is always to use your MBWA, right? Your management by walking around. Meet your people, find out what they're up to, find out, you know, who's got a kid going to college, who's buying a house. Granted, if it's a huge company, it's going to be hard to meet everybody, but still make an effort. Find out who you're bossing and what their lives are like, and encourage them to come to you with ideas and with, you know, with this and that and the other thing. Yeah, don't just say your door is open. Make sure it is open, and make sure you got a cup of coffee there for them when they come in. Because there was a group called the Business Roundtable about a year ago that said the key for companies now is not increasing shareholder value. It's developing employees with value-driven principles and having a company that runs on value-driven principles. That's what's going to make companies successful in the new post-COVID era. And if you're not on board with that, you're going to be in trouble.
You know, and it's a hard one because it's hard to wrap your hands around. Much easier to look at a spreadsheet and say we either did or didn't meet our numbers, right? Much harder to nurture, develop, grow people, and make them passionate.
Yeah, but when you look at that spreadsheet and say we didn't meet our numbers, is your first inclination to say we didn't meet our numbers because our people screwed up, or we didn't meet our numbers because they weren't realistic when we created them? Where does the responsibility lie? And it's far too easy in the modern era when you just think back to the 70s, maybe, I guess, when we were making products that the whole world wanted to buy. And now we don't make many of those anymore. Excuse me. We don't make televisions and stereos and things. We import them from other countries. So, you got to figure out whose fault it is. That's a terrible word. You got to figure out whose responsibility it is and make the proper adjustments, and don't just fire people wholesale because you didn't make your numbers.
So true. What have we not talked about that you think is really important for people to know? Leaders are hungry. They're really hungry, Mark, for doing something different. They don't know what to do differently, I think. I think that's part of it, because they've got a big system they've got to manage. And we have years of having managed this way. And we teach in our MBA programs, this is the way you manage. This is what our consulting firms consult about as well. So number one piece of advice that you would give?
Beyond treating people like people, it's just you have to realize that what you need to do in terms of overall management philosophy is so simple. It's not complicated. It's not rocket science. It's very, very simple to come across to. And it's just in inculcating basic things like treating people decently and having your ability as a manager to say, I made a mistake. Here's a football analogy. In the year 2000, in the NFL draft, where they draft college players into the NFL, the 199th player picked in the 2000 draft, after 198 other players were chosen, the New England Patriots chose a quarterback named Tom Brady. Well, Tom Brady is still playing, and it's 2022, and he's got 7 Super Bowl rings. That means that 31 other teams had 6 chances to draft Tom Brady and didn't do it.
They missed it.
So they missed it. They messed up. What did they do? They blamed their scouts. Well, he wasn't big enough. He didn't have a strong enough arm. No. Admit that you made a mistake and move on. Don't blame everybody else.
But, yeah, that's a good one. Don't blame. No shame, no blame. Don't, and just move on.
Nope.
And we'll learn from it, actually, and then move on.
And there are so many simple things. It's just there was, I saw a story the other day about, his name is Walt Bettinger, I believe, from the investment firm, and I've gone blank on the name. But when he hires a new executive, one of the things that he does is he takes him to breakfast at a coffee shop. But before the guy gets there, he tells the coffee shop manager, make sure the waiter screws up the guy's order. Don't worry, I'm not going to be mad. I'm going to give him a big tip. But he wanted to see how the guy would react to an underling messing up. And if the guy got real haughty and obnoxious, he wouldn't hire him. But if the guy said, hey, look, I'm sorry, I meant for these eggs to be scrambled. And if he said, can you change them? If he was nice, he knew the guy was going to be nice to his employees. So it's just, it's simple stuff. It's ABC stuff. Stop overcomplicating everything. Stop reading books this high compiled by consultants. Just do simple things that make people understand. Learn how UCLA coach John Wooden, one of the greatest coaches of all time, basketball, 10 consecutive NCAA basketball titles, the first practice every year, he would sit his players down on the court and teach them how to put on their socks and sneakers. That's how practice-based. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, one of the greatest players of all time, spent 4 years at UCLA. Four times he sat on the court while Coach Wooden taught him how to put on his shoes and sneakers, socks and sneakers. Was he teaching them how to put their sneakers on? No, they knew how to do that. What was he teaching them? If you take care of the little things, the big things take care of themselves. If you put your sneakers and socks on right, you won't get blisters on your feet, you won't miss playing time, and we'll win more games. It's that simple.
It is that simple. Wow. You are so right. We overcomplicate. We've made it very difficult. And we've gotten into so much judgment about what one another does that sense of innovating, daring to innovate, we're losing it. You know, people are afraid to innovate. And yet innovation is the key to the future.
If you're not out front pushing the envelope in a decent way, in a team oriented way, you're going to be in trouble. One of the sections of my course, I spent 4 years. I'm a volunteer at Children's Medical Center here in Dallas, and I spent 4 years following one of our heart surgeons, a doctor named Christine Gulasarian, pediatric cardiothoracic surgery, probably the most difficult specialty there is, operating on little hearts this big, right? And we wrote a book together about her career. She is one of the most effective, amazing leaders I've ever seen. She is so people-oriented. She cares so much about her patients and their families, and it just seeps out of every pore of her being. And there's a portrait of a profile of her in my course to say, look, you know, granted, here I'm talking about football. Well, football, you know, we could all live without football. This woman makes life and death decisions every single day.
Yeah.
And here's how she does it. And here's the love that she brings to it.
Yeah. And it's that there's a process, there's a discipline, but there's that sense of really getting who people are that allows people like that to be successful. And it's what I think everybody in the organization wants, whether they're the leader or the employee, just get me, know who I am and appreciate who that is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Our time is gone by so fast. What have we left out that you really want people to know that we haven't had a chance to talk about?
Oh, wow. Well, can I do a shameless plug and say visit leadwithprinciple.com?
Of course, you may do.
Find out more. And that's principle, P-L-E principle, obviously, not P-A-L, because P-A-L is from the schoolyard. But leadwithprinciple.com will tell you more about what I have to offer for you. It's so simple. And I'll say flat out, I don't have a great deal of management experience myself. I was the executive producer of a sports radio network for a couple of years. But and those people dismissed me the day after my mother died. I was dismissed. Wow. Okay, how talk about employers who don't care about their employees. But I think you can learn just as much about management by being an employee as you can by being a CEO. Because you can see what to do and what not to do. And I learned what to do from Tex, and I learned what not to do from a lot of other people.
So well said. On that note, we will conclude. And Mark, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. It's been a delight.
And for those of you who are with us on this podcast. Thank you for being with us on Building My Legacy podcast. And remember to visit our websites at buildtomorrow.com with the number 2, and also Start With Collaboration. We will have information about Mark in the show notes. Please go visit those show notes so that you can get further information. We are desperately in need of more thoughtful leadership. And so this is a great opportunity to start to think about it a little bit differently. So I wish you the fun of exploring. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Building My Legacy podcast with Dr. Lois Sonstegard. To book your appointment with Dr. Sonstegard, visit www.buildtomorrow.com.